Diaz, and welcome to CBS Mornings On The Go. Ahead on this July 9th, the controversial Democrat Graham Plattner says he's dropping out of Maine Senate race amid growing pressure from his party. Now the clock is ticking to find a new candidate. We'll tell you what happens next. Plus, a terrifying medical scare for journalist Katie Couric. She says she was diagnosed with a sudden and temporary form of amnesia. We'll talk to a neurologist about the condition, possible warning signs, and the risk factors. Then, how do you divide up the chores in your household? Well, Good Housekeeping's editor-in-chief is here with tips on how to make sure everybody in the house is doing their part. And model and actress Eva Marcel joins us to talk about the final season of her hit show, All the Queen's Men. All that and more ahead.
The political meltdown in Maine that could impact control of the U.S. Senate. Overnight, Democrat Graham Plattner said he is dropping out of his state Senate race. It follows allegations of rape and physical abuse, which he denies. Democrats are scrambling to find a new nominee. Caitlin Huey Burns is in Maine. Caitlin, good morning.
Good morning to you, Vlad. Well, even in announcing that he was leaving the race, Plattner remained defiant, dismissing those allegations and arguing it was the party system trying to force him out. But now the hard work begins as Democrats here try to pick up the pieces under a very tight deadline.
After a week of mounting allegations, vanishing support, and a showdown with state Democratic Party officials,
we are suspending campaign operations.
Graham Plattner says he intends to drop out of Maine's Senate race. The announcement comes after two women who claim they dated Plattner in the past accused him of sexual and physical abuse.
I know that some will think it's an admission of guilt, and it most certainly is not.
Jenny Rassicot and Lindsay Fifield detailed their allegations in interviews this week.
It was domestic abuse.
He violated multiple layers of consent that night.
Plattner has continuously denied these allegations.
Those in power who have the ability to do so are using these allegations as an excuse to take away all of the things that we need to run a campaign.
Maine Democrats have until July 27th to pick a new candidate to take on longtime incumbent Republican Susan Collins. There's already a crowded field of contenders, including Dr. Nirav Shah, Maine's former health director.
The pathway to flipping the Senate from red to blue goes through Maine.
How anxious are Democrats feeling right now?
We are feeling 1,000 emotions all at once. And the one that I would say is overriding is the eagerness and the commitment to defeating Susan Collins in the fall.
Former State Senate President Troy Jackson and Maine Beer Company founder Dan Kleben also announced they're seeking their party's nomination. But a defiant Plattner says the decision should come from voters.
Decisions should not be made in back rooms by people in places of political power.
Okay, so where does this all go from here? Well, the state Democratic Party here has now decided they'll hold a nominating convention by the end of the month, but they're still trying to figure out exactly what that would look like. So still a lot more work to do for Democrats here. Vlad.
All right, Caitlin, thank you very much. Let's bring in CBS News political contributor and Democratic strategist Joel Payne. Joel, good morning.
Good morning.
So Graham Plattner has categorically denied the allegations against him. He says he did nothing wrong. He seems, though, to be blaming the Democratic establishment for forcing him out. Joel, is that because party leaders concluded he was simply unelectable because Democrats feel that there's some kind of moral obligation here for a candidate facing an allegation like this to withdraw, regardless of whether or not it's been proven? And ultimately, shouldn't that judgment be for the voters and not the establishment?
Well, Vlad, it's somewhat appropriate that that's where Plattner went before announcing that he was suspending his campaign. He kind of, offered up very strong critique of the establishment because his campaign itself was a commentary on the establishment and the power that he hoped to rebalance between working people and between those in power. And so the fact that he offered this commentary and this critique is not surprising, because this was essentially a proxy war about that. I think where we go from here is Democrats trying to pick up the pieces. And you hear a lot of commentary online about, well, how did we get here? Whose fault is this? Is it the fault of the people that identified Graham Plattner? Is it the fault of the establishment class who did not offer up the type of candidates who would appropriately challenge a Plattner in the primary? And to me, I think there's medicine for everybody to take. And I think what Democrats across the country and in Maine are doing right now is trying to learn the lessons of how we got here with Plattner, and where do we go next, and how do you refocus on trying to defeat Susan Collins in November?
All right, so then how how do you go about finding someone who could fulfill the obligations that he has made to the voters who are supporting him? In other words, finding someone who can be elected in that very same lane.
Yeah, and look, Platner nodded to this, and others have as well. It is important that this decision is transparent and open and public. I think a lot of Democrats are learning the lessons from what happened with Joe Biden in 2024. Very different circumstance, obviously, but same impact. Voters chose somebody, and then because of decisions out of their hands, that person was not on the ballot ultimately when they chose them in a primary. I think what Democrats want to do is make sure that Maine voters, particularly those who were reached by Platner's working class economic populism message, feel represented, and they don't feel like the type of candidate with the type of focus and the type of agenda that they believe in, that is not represented on the ballot in November. And Caitlin talked about there's going to be a nominated convention by the end of the month. You've talked about some of those candidates, whether it's Troy Jackson or Rob Shaw, Dan Kleben. There will be lots of folks, I imagine, who jump in and lots of opportunities for people to weigh in.
So, Joel, very quickly, is this still winnable for Democrats?
I think it is still winnable for Democrats, but I would point out, even with more traditional candidates in the past, a Shanna Bellows in 2014 and a Sarah Gideon in 2020, Susan Collins was able to defy political odds against her. So she is a tough Republican to defeat under any circumstance. I don't think Democrats have made it easier for themselves this time around.
All right, Joel Payne, always appreciate talking with you, my friend. Thank you.
All right, what you've been waiting for, the Emmy nominations, they are out, and one streamer is having a very big moment. Hit shows like The Pitt and Hacks helped HBO Max get 122 nominations. Entertainment Tonight's Emily Curl has a look at the shows that could take home Emmy gold, along with the biggest snubs and surprises.
Nothing will ever matter more than what I've done in this hospital.
HBO's medical drama The Pitt is back on call.
I hate seeing families torn apart.
Leading with 25 Emmy nominations and crowding the actor categories with 13 nods.
Wake up!
Another HBO show, Hacks, was nearly as dominant with 24 nods. But it broke the record for most nominations for a comedy in its final season.
You can't write my memoir. You're too obsessed with me.
Are you reading my mind?
No.
Two new Apple TV shows, dark comedy Pluribus and horror comedy Widow's Bay, scored big with nearly 20 nominations each.
Seemed like a small thing back then.
Notably snubbed, Kathy Bates from CBS's Matlock, along with Jeremy Allen White and Eben Moss Bachrach from FX's The Bear.
Ibrahim.
Meanwhile, Rob Reiner earned a posthumous nomination for Outstanding Guest Actor for his role on the show.
You can take notes.
And just days after her wedding celebration, Taylor Swift is in her Emmys era, nominated again this year, landing 5 nods for The Eras Tour, the final show.
Okay.
Heated Rivalry's Connor Story got his first nomination, but not for the show that made him famous.
Thank you very much.
Instead, it's for hosting Saturday Night Live.
Hey, ladies! Welcome to Fiji!
And a surprise first nod for reality TV star Ariana Maddox as the host of Love Island USA.
Hey, I just gotta get some champagne first.
Okay, we love Love Island. All right, Emily Curl from ET, she joins us now for the first time on our show.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, we love having you here. Okay, we got to go back to Heated Rivalry. Of course, Connor Story nominated, but for SNL.
Yes.
But Heated Rivalry not nominated, even though it was such a breakout hit. I mean, I watched it.
Everybody.
Yeah, we all were loving it.
Yeah, so a lot of Why wasn't it nominated?
Yeah, a lot of the fans are really surprised by this. But actually, even if the voters wanted to show and honor this show and show it some love, it's technically not eligible because it was an entirely Canadian production. So the Emmy rule states that if a show is funded and produced in Canada, it won't be eligible for the criteria here.
What is that about? Come on.
I know.
We love our Canadian shows.
I know. So we've seen some other shows that have done it before, but it just has to be, a collaboration between the U.S. and their foreign partners.
I'm just happy about Hacks. It's my favorite show. I'm so sad it's over. I'm not done watching, so please no spoilers. Nope, but what do you think it was about Hacks that got them so many nominations?
Oh, I mean, it's just such a show that we all love. I feel like we all can relate to. We've all seen that dynamic. And Jean Smart, can we talk about Jean for a minute?
She's incredible.
And she can actually make history. So if she wins, she'll be tied for the most acting Emmy noms ever with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Cloris Leachman with 8 noms if she wins. So this will be really exciting.
Now, the other family that's celebrating, the Fanning sisters. Let's let's talk about the two of them, Dakota and Elle, both nominated.
Yes, yes. So Dakota is for All Her Fault. Of course, she has a limited series. And then we had Elle that was nominated for Margo's Got Money Troubles. And Dakota and Elle actually produced this series together, which was really special. So hearing them celebrate together, and they're currently working on a new movie. So
amazing. We love it.
They're so talented.
And we love
so
you, Emily Curl. Thanks for coming
Thank
by.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really appreciate again.
The news out of the Middle East. There's some stepped-up fighting there and growing fears of an all-out war between the U.S. and Iran. For a second night, the U.S. military launched dozens of strikes on targets inside Iran. Tehran says those attacks have now killed at least 14 people. Both the United States and Iran blame each other for breaking the ceasefire agreement. Weijia Jiang is at the White House. Weijia, good morning.
Vlad, good morning to you and good morning to everybody. Just 3 weeks after signing a memorandum of understanding with Iran, President Trump announced yesterday the ceasefire is now over. The U.S. Defense Department said last night it hit at least 90 Iranian military targets in response to what the Trump administration is calling unjustified aggression by Iran. Earlier this week, Iran attacked three commercial ships in the Strait of Hormuz and hit U.S. military targets in Bahrain and Kuwait. Now it is threatening to completely close the strait. But Trump warned on Truth Social if Iran targets commercial ships again, the U.S. response could, quote, get much worse. In Turkey, President Trump tried to cool concerns from NATO allies of a prolonged war after oil prices spiked and stocks tumbled Wednesday. Gas prices had been falling while the ceasefire was still in place after hitting a peak of more than $4.50 in May. But as the conflict heats back up, some analysts warn Americans could yet again see the average price of regular gas tick past $4 per gallon. Natalie.
All right, Weijia Jiang, thank you. Now to an alarming health scare for former CBS Evening News anchor Katie Couric. She revealed on a Substack post this week that she was diagnosed with temporary amnesia. Couric says the incident resembled a stroke and she couldn't recall the year or even recent events. For more on this, we're joined by Dr. Leah Kroll, a neurologist at Maimonides Health Center in New York. Good morning, Dr. Kroll. Good to have you with us. So I read this Substack and it's scary to hear about this. Is this a common condition and what are the symptoms?
This is scary. So it's called transient global amnesia. It's uncommon. Every year it happens to about 5 to 10 people per 100,000. And it's essentially a sudden onset episode of temporary memory loss. Specifically, we deal with anterograde amnesia. That means an inability to form new memories or retain new information. So often these patients are asking the same questions over and over again. Where am I? How did I get here? What's going
on? Gosh, it's like movie.
They remember who they are, though, right? You
they
know
remember
who, you are.
Who they are. They don't have other neurologic symptoms. So there's no weakness, numbness, changes in vision. Their language is intact. Mm-hmm. It's just this really scary, freaky inability to retain that new information. It lasts up to 24 hours. Most people feel better within about 6 hours, though.
So why does it happen and what are the warning signs?
This is a great question because it's a medical mystery. We don't quite know what's going on in the body when this is happening. We know during the episode there's some dysfunction in the hippocampus. That's the memory control center within the brain. But beyond that, we're not sure why it happens. It can be triggered by intense physical or emotional stress. So something like a strenuous workout or a real emotional shock might trigger it. But sometimes it doesn't necessarily have a trigger. And in terms of warning signs, there really aren't any because by definition, this is sudden in onset, meaning 1 second you're fine, the next you're not.
So what should people be looking out for? In other words, how do you know that it's not just, for example, like typical husband stuff, you forget things, you forget names, you forget where you're supposed to be.
Forget your anniversary.
Forget your anniversary.
Not my husband.
I've never done that.
No.
But something that is, because it must be incredibly frightening for people who are experiencing this.
It's incredibly frightening, and I'm glad you bring this up because people should know if they're watching at home. If you think this is happening to you, you do want to go to the ER immediately. Okay. You want to call 911 because it could be a stroke or other neurologic emergency. So you have to get brain scans. You have to be absorbed in the hospital. You have to get checked out to make sure that it's not something more serious. In terms of could this be just regular forgetfulness, it's such a dramatic and frightening presentation. Mm-hmm. It's not going to look like regular forgetfulness. I mean, that questioning of how did I get here? What's going on? It's really, really distinct.
But it's not a stroke, right? And could it repeat? Is there, you know, could Katie, for example,
have another episode. Yeah.
It's not a stroke. It's not a seizure. It's not a brain tumor. There's no permanent brain damage. And it doesn't increase your risk for those serious neurologic conditions down the line, which is really good. So the prognosis here is great. People do really well with this. The vast majority of people will have one episode, a very weird blip, and it's done. Very rarely it can recur, though.
Yeah, and I did read on Katie's Substack that she said her doctor said, don't worry, tomorrow you'll wake up, you'll be fine. So that's the
case. And you won't remember that this happened?
Yeah, no. Maybe, probably. Yeah. Dr. Kroll, thank you so much. Appreciate you being here with us.
All right, coming up, from dishes to laundry to managing the family schedule, how do you divide those chores in your house? What your decisions could mean for your relationships and your work. Plus, it wouldn't be summer without the hit CBS reality show Big Brother. We go inside the Big Brother house with host Julie Chen Moonves. Welcome to our living room. A record 52% of U.S. households now have both parents working full time. We can all relate to that. So when it comes to household chores, how do you split them up? To better understand how people manage their homes, listen to this. Good Housekeeping has released a new American Home Survey in its latest issue. It explores how responsibilities at home impact relationships, careers, and stress. Elspeth Felton is Good Housekeeping's editor-in-chief and joins us now. Elspeth, thank you so much for coming.
So happy to be here.
We love talking about this topic. We've all been asking each other how we split things up. Yeah. So what did your survey find?
Yeah, something that's not new in the American home is that 78% of readers told us that household responsibilities still aren't split evenly. Only 8% of people told us that in their house, things are really split evenly.
And do we believe them?
I think we do. Women are saying that they're still responsible.
You sound skeptical.
But you're right. Women are telling us that they're still responsible for chores like the cleaning and the cooking, while men say that they're working on yard work and taking out the garbage. In my home, you know, I feel like things are split pretty evenly. When I talk to my husband, he says he feels like he does about 60% of the housekeeping. Hmm. So I call that an even split, but it does seem like at least...
I'm with you on that one.
I mean, it does seem like at least 75% of people told us that one chore at least is split evenly in household. So things are on the move.
So we just had a neurologist on the show, and I asked, is there something that changes in the brain between women and men, especially when they become parents? Mm. And I wonder if people are gravitating towards some chores who are women and men toward others. And it sounds like your survey found that they were.
Yeah, it definitely seems like women and men told us that these kind of gender roles are kind of still in place. But it's interesting to see how these things kind of morph with time.
Now, here's what I love, your survey, what they find when there is the benefits to a couple's relationship.
Yes.
If both partners are doing household chores. I mean, if my husband breaks out the vacuum cleaner, nothing sexier. Come on.
Really?
Break out the vacuum.
The apple of your wife's eye.
No. Well, I mean, the difficulty, I think, is when it comes to the responsibilities with a child, because I feel like my wife is more aware of like the right size for clothing, for shoes.
I mean, that's definitely true in my household.
So I'm trying to get better at that. But the traditional like chores, cleaning, cooking, we share those. I mean, I'm a great cook. She's a good cook. Yeah. She's a great cook.
My husband cleans the kitchen every night, which is amazing.
That's awesome.
And I know a family, they had their third child because the husband cleaned the garage.
Oh, that's
The
wife was like, you've never been sexier.
That's exactly what our survey found. 95% of people said that when their partner participates in chores in the household, they're more attractive to them. 59% of people said that they would rather have their partner participate in chores than plan a romantic date. So helping around the house, it definitely is a way to show love and mutual respect.
Okay, that date thing is a stretch for me. But I want to hear about, apparently, over time, there's more of an equal balance.
Yeah.
With chores.
I mean, I don't know about you and your relationships, but some people did say that over time, as they've been with their partners for longer and longer, the chores do seem to even out over time. You know, I think there's something about the mental load, too, that as you're together for longer and as you learn how to communicate better, it really becomes clear that there are these invisible chores that can really pile up, too. These aren't just the physical responsibilities like cooking and cleaning, but like you just said, Vlad, knowing what size your kids' clothes are.
Right.
That's something that one person in the relationship has to handle, and it's not something you can necessarily see them doing every day.
What's funny is when you talk to our parents, I remember my daughter was two, and she said, you know, I need to used the potty. So I took her into the bathroom to change her diaper. And I came out, and my mom and dad were sitting there. My mother goes, your father never changed a diaper in his life.
Yeah, my dad never did either.
Never changed a diaper. Nope. But like, to me, it's the most natural thing to change your child's diaper.
Yeah, my husband's father just changed our child's diaper for the first time.
So they can learn.
Yes, and we're almost out of time, but what's your top recommendation for couples looking to kind of even things out?
Yeah, you know, I think communication is key. Whether you try a family calendar device like a calendar or an app, or even just get things down on paper, really, really having it all in front of you shows those invisible tasks, like the mental load task on top of the tasks that are more physical, like cooking and cleaning. Keeping in touch as much as possible can help the burden really feel spread out.
All right. Good advice. Elspeth Velton, thank you. So fascinating.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Another incredible season of Big Brother kicks off tonight on CBS and Paramount Plus. This is, get this, the 28th season. Wow. Big Brother will become the first primetime series ever to reach 1,000 original episodes. Now, as usual, fans can expect the unexpected. And Big Brother host Julie Chen Moonves invited Entertainment Tonight's Denny Directo into the house for a sneak peek. So many kids don't know what they're doing.
Welcome, CBS Mornings, to the Big Brother house.
I feel like I've time traveled.
You just wait.
Well, I always say it's not summer without Big Brother. Don't you agree?
Took the words right out of my mouth.
So we're back. I mean, season 28, which evidently will include your 1,000th episode.
Making history, people. Hello, house guests. Hello, house guests. Hello, house guests.
Hi, Julie.
This year's theme, it's all over the house, BB Time Trip. So tell me how you guys are injecting nostalgia into this season of the game.
Time travel is the theme because I don't know about you, but I feel like everywhere I look, there's so much nostalgia.
Oh yeah. You guys are literally transporting not just the house guests, but also viewers through the eras in history, but also Big Brother history, right?
Yes, there's a lot of history. There are a lot of iconic moments.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you grab a life vest because you're a floater?
She's freaking eating my charcuterie stuff.
She did not ask me.
How about you, my friend? You're the biggest liar, manipulator.
If these walls could talk.
What's up?
Siri, you are evicted from the Big Brother house.
You're so smart, Kristen.
Yeah,
I
am.
Have a fashion degree.
Yeah.
And you are because you have a chemistry degree. String a sentence together without using the word like, will you?
Let's talk about some of these newly announced house guests because we have an MMA fighter, the daughter of an 80s pop star, Lyric Medeiros, and then also a former Drag Race all-star, Selena Estides, will be joining the game. Could we see celebrities or maybe some familiar CBS faces join the game?
I always say, don't count anything out.
So what do you say we get things started?
Well, I would love to see the rest of this house.
Let's do it.
There's a lot of artifacts here from different time eras, really, right?
Yes.
Including prehistoric?
Yes, that is the head of a triceratop.
Wow.
I think.
Okay.
This lazy Susan, she not lazy. Oh. She not lazy at all, that's all I could say.
This Susan's up to no good.
It has a lot to do with the twist.
Okay. Can I ask you about one of these things?
Yes.
Summer of Love. Is this a little hint to some future showmances? What do you think this season?
I sure hope so.
I hope so. There's usually at least one, right?
I will tell you, all the house guests are single, and most of them said they're ready to mingle.
That's right.
Okay.
I would love to see Gail King in the house.
Love.
And obviously you know her well.
Yes, but Gail King would win.
How? Would it be the social game or would she surprise us all in the competitions?
Oh, no, she's the one who taught me the power of prayer. She's got a direct line to God, so okay. She would win. So no, she can't play because she's gonna win.
She's gonna win.
We want drama like, so-and-so won. No, 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 Gail, just stick to your mornings, okay?
I think Gail would be really good on the show, right?
Crush any reality.
The power of persuasion.
I'd get voted out day one. I'd be like, can't stand this.
They would. Even the guy on Survivor was like, get this guy out.
Get this guy out. The loser.
Well, good thing we will never find that out because we'll stick to the morning show. But Big Brother kicks off tonight with a 90-minute episode at 8 p.m. Eastern. You can find new episodes on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus every Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Talk of the Table is next.
Oh, it's me. I'm like, who is this again? And it's like on the tip of my tongue.
Maroon 5.
Thank you so much for that. All right, and it's time for the stories that are talk of the table, because this is the table. And Vlad, we be what?
We be talking. Yep. So as we sell, did you know it was National Fashion Day?
I didn't.
But I thought you looked extra fashionable today in
Thank you very much. We're getting the both of you surrounded. I'm ensconced in fashion here this morning on CBS Morning. So my talk at the table is a head-turning new list from the New York Times. Head-turning. From this camera to this turning. The first batch of their annual fashion roundup of the 39-ish most stylish people of 2026.
Sorry, I'm reading ahead.
Keep going. So the standouts include, I mean, Chase Infinity.
My favorite.
Always brings it. Figure skater Alyssa Liu. And of course,
Bad Bunny.
Oh, yeah. All right. But as I was looking through this list, I was like, what is the New York Times talking about here? Check out some of the others that made the cut.
Okay.
The Artemis II astronauts.
Oh.
I mean, they're stylish, but it's just basically a uniform.
Blue jumpsuits. Yeah.
Okay. What about RFK doing like an exercise bike in what looks like a sauna?
In denim, more importantly.
Yes, very stylish. Amy Poehler, I think, looks great. I mean, I don't know. But then you've got politician from Brooklyn, Ian Huntley.
Okay.
You think that's stylish?
A little prep,
prep style.
Is it? Okay.
It's highbrow.
So it made me think that they were missing some names here. Yeah. Why not just include, for example, Adam Sandler, right? I mean, he looks great.
Yeah.
Kid Rock with the plastic pants. Their unique personal style comes to mind, even if they're not always the best dressed. I'd also make room for all-star style icons like Pharrell and Tyler, the Creator. Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite fashion icon?
Well, I was going to say Chase Infinity, which is why I got excited. Okay. She made the New York Times list, but Zendaya.
Oh,
she's got to be
always brings it. Always brings it.
Yes.
I mean, Natalie. I don't. Penelope Cruz is just classic. Penelope Cruz. Yeah.
I think Lupita Nyong'o.
Yes.
Lupita.
Always brings it, and Justin Theroux. I think he looks great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also
good ones.
Right?
Yeah.
They're like, Justin, we love you.
Nobody wears a tuxedo better unless you're Vlad. My talk at the table is how movies have been consistently getting longer. Have you noticed this? But how long is just too long for you? For example, Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey opens next week. It runs 2 hours and 52 minutes. So is this what audiences want? No, says a new survey by Talker Researcher.
Really?
Only 10% of the 2,000 adults asked said that they want movies to be 2 hours or longer. Just 3% want them to run more than 2.5 hours.
Wow.
So here's the magic runtime, people. You know, apparently it declines by generation. So with boomers, they prefer a runtime of around 93 minutes or so. And that's 1 hour, 33 minutes if you do the math. Well, Gen Z, they want the shortest movie possible at just 82 minutes. Who's got patience for that?
I mean,
ain't nobody got time for that.
It's not even a movie, it's a TV show.
I blame TikTok.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it depends on the movie. I got a sneak peek of The Odyssey.
Is it worth it?
And you don't feel the time.
Right.
It's so beautifully
Think about the
shot.
Great movies.
It's an epic.
The Godfather, West Side Story, Gone with the Wind, The Wizard of Oz, all those movies run, you know,
True.
3 hours plus, and they're amazing. I think it's our attention spans.
Here's the thing. If I have to have a bathroom break in the middle of a movie, too long. If I have to get a refill of my popcorn, too long.
Come on, really? As long as the story is keeping me glued to my seat, I'm down for it. I don't care how long it is.
Okay.
Longer. Four hours.
4 hours.
You paid for it, so you want to get most value.
Exactly.
For
I watch every single Star Wars in one sitting.
I love it. Okay, so my talk at the table is a concept called airport divorce that is reportedly helping couples reduce the stress of flying. We all know that people travel through airports differently. We know that some people, like me, like to board as early as possible because I got to get my overhead space.
Yes.
I like to settle in, unpack all my things. Others, like my better half, like to take their time before boarding, buy a snack perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a travel writer for the British Sunday Times introduced this concept of airport divorce last year with the headline, "I have found the secret to a happy relationship," saying it works for him and his wife. So basically, after going through security, you split up. Each person does whatever they want, and then they reunite on the plane. What do we think about this?
I like this plan.
Right?
I like my husband. We're getting an airport divorce.
Yes.
You know, because I'm like you. I like my time to get my snacks, get through the airport, but I make sure I'm like 1.5 to 2 hours early.
Me too.
My husband, meantime, is like pushing it.
No, I don't like to push it.
So wait,
it makes me nervous.
Will you go to the airport separately so you can leave earlier?
No, because that's too much money for the car.
Yeah.
What about you? I am stressed when I fly. I don't like to fly, believe it or not. So I don't mind the idea of an airport divorce, but I also sometimes look to my wife for emotional support when I'm going through security and when I get on a plane.
Oh, you need some hand holding?
I hold her hand when I'm flying and I look at the clock. Yeah, it's stressful. I don't know, my whole life. Yeah.
I love
what
that.
About you?
All the things we learn about
that. I leave my husband at the gate. I'm on that plane with the quickness.
See ya.
Our next guest is reality star, actress, and America's Next Top Model winner, Eva Marcel. She stars in the hit series, All the Queen's Men. She plays Madam, a savvy entrepreneur who builds an empire around a male adult entertainment club. In this fifth and final season, she tries to find out who was behind a shooting that almost took her down.
So I hear you have a suspect in my shooting.
Who told you that?
Don't worry about that.
Well, they're wrong, because we're still investigating.
All right, well, you obviously have your sights set on someone. Who was it?
Oh, I see your informant didn't tell you that.
No, they did, which is why I'm here, because you're gonna tell me.
Now, see, that's where you're wrong, because I'm not gonna tell you that or anything else.
I would tell you, Eva.
I would tell you.
Oh my God.
No problem. What
Eva
else do you need to know?
We're so glad that you're here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Welcome back.
You're so kind and sweet, but Madam is fierce. Ooh. She'll cut you.
Yes.
Right? Like, how do you, what drew you to her character, and what do you think has drawn audiences to her? Because they love her.
I think she's just so unapologetically her. And it's fun when you watch television to kind of escape into a world that you really couldn't live in real life. And so we get to kind of play in that. I get to exact my rage and frustration, things that I could never do in real life on screen. And it's so much fun. And I think people enjoy that, too, because we're all civil human beings here.
Yeah, right.
So you're holding this in, but I get to do what you really would want to do, but you can't do. Yeah. I get to do it on TV.
You unleash it all on set.
All on set. All that rage, all the frustration, the little, I wanted to give my child this morning. Yeah. I do it on set.
Well, it must feel so good afterwards.
Yeah. It must feel good. But a lot of these qualities that Madam exhibits have long been associated with male characters in film and television. The power, the ambition, the moral complexity. Why do you think audiences are connecting with this character in the way that you're portraying her?
I think the audiences love the fact that the gender roles are flipped. Mm-hmm. That you usually see women a little bit more demure, a little bit more, what do you need? How can I help?
Yep.
And this, Madam knows what she wants and she's going to get it. No is never an answer.
Yeah.
And seeing a woman in that kind of a position, I think that men just enjoy that kind of strength. Mm-hmm. Oddly, I've noticed like Shaq and I have like Magic Johnson, like the people
it's sexy.
Would never think would enjoy the show that much. Men love it.
They're reaching out to you?
Yeah.
Shaq and Magic?
Shaq said on Inside the NBA, he's like, Eva Marcel, can I get on your show? Like, can we dance? The men love the show. And I think it's just a power that they know women have that we're not always allowed to show because of the way the world works and just gender ideas. And so Madam does it. Well, I mean, the show, as we said, it's coming to an end. It's the fifth and final season. It sounds like you're going to really miss this character a lot. But you're the queen of reinvention. I mean, just looking at you, you're back to your old do that we remember you from America's Next Top Model. The Pixie is back. What brought you to this? And you debuted this at the BET Awards.
I did. I debuted my hair at the BET Awards. And thank you. You know, hair transformation is a big deal for a man or a woman,
but
especially for a woman. It was time to do something new. And I wanted to go back to where I started. It's something about going back to where you began to remind you about where you're going and cutting it all off, burying it all.
I know.
Oh, man.
And you still look the same, you know? Look at
literally.
Text Tyra and I said, hey, T, I cut my hair.
Oh, you did?
Back off.
Nice.
Yep. And she said, baby, your face has always been the star.
Love that. I didn't realize that when you didn't plan to audition for America's Next Top Model. You were there with a friend.
Yes.
Do you think
and
the
you
fact
ended
that
up winning.
You didn't expect to be part of it helped give you an edge?
You know, I was that friend. I don't have any sisters. So I was that friend that would try out with anyone. So my friend like tried out for cheerleading. I'm like, oh, I'll go with you. They cut me first round. Tried out for dance. They cut me when I walked in the door. So she's like, let's go try out for this modeling thing. Cool.
Yeah.
They didn't cut me.
No.
I was like, wait,
they sure
what?
Didn't.
Not only didn't
they
cut
never
you,
cut
you won the whole thing.
The whole
I was beyond, I must say, I was so surprised.
Very spice. Can't wait to see what you do next. Eva Marcel, thank you so much for being here. The fifth and final season of All the Queen's Men is streaming now with episodes every Wednesday on Paramount Plus.
That does it for us. We'll see you tomorrow on CBS Mornings. Eva, say bye to the people.
Bye, people. Thank you.
Everything has to come to an end.
Now streaming only on Paramount Plus. The acclaimed series, The Chi, reaches its final chapter.
We from Chicago. It's my home.
From Emmy Award winner Lena Waithe.
There are two types of people in this world. Those that reach for more and those that just enjoy what they got.
This The Chi. Anything's possible.
Singing this song to you.
The Chi, the final season now streaming only on Paramount Plus.